Cassette 2, Side 2. Unit 10, Section A. Listening. Activity 3. Exam question. You will hear a report on national service in different European countries. As you listen, fill in the information for items 1 to 10. Listen carefully. You will hear this piece twice.
There has been no compulsory national service in Britain now for decades, and many people would like to see this situation changed. Some say that it is character-forming and helps develop a feeling of national pride and identity. Others say that rather than military service, some sort of compulsory civilian service, helping the elderly or other such social work, would be both useful to society as a whole and formative for young people. We thought it would be interesting to find out how other countries deal with national service, and so we have invited Tessa Davis,
Hello,
who has recently completed a comprehensive report on national service in Europe, to tell us what happens elsewhere.
Well, the situation varies enormously from one country to another. The country with the longest military service is Greece, where all able-bodied young males have to serve a minimum of 19 months. The army. Then at the bottom of the scale you have Austria with 6 months and Portugal with only 4. Apart from the UK, only Ireland and Luxembourg have none at all.
Is there any chance that the countries in the European Union will standardize their national service laws?
Well, although many countries are changing their laws and the length of service, there's a general tendency to shorten the service. There's no move towards bringing all the national service laws in line or having a single European model.
Mm-hmm. What about alternative national services?
In some countries, there is no choice. Greece, for example, not even people opposing the use of arms on religious grounds can avoid doing their time in the military. Spain is another example. Although there are plans to change the situation, and conscientious objectors may already, very exceptionally, work for the Red Cross. And then, on the other hand, you have countries like Holland and Sweden, where large numbers of young people opt for civilian service.
Which country has the most demanding national service?
Switzerland. Where, although the laws are perhaps the most demanding, it's also where they are the least resented. There, every able-bodied male must do 3 weeks' training every year until the age of 32. This is in addition to the 17-day initial training session which they do when they reach the age of 20. There's also an alternative civilian service for those who object on religious grounds.
So there are quite a few variations to the idea of national service.
Yes. Well, as you can see, there are as many solutions as there are countries. But I think it is true to say that there is a general softening of these laws, and fewer people do their service today in each individual country than, say, 15 years ago.
Unit 10, Section A. Listening. Activity 5. Extract A.
Why do you think conscription is so important?
I think it's an important part of your formative years. After all, your country has given you maybe 10 years of education. Now it's time for you to do something for your country in return. I think there are many things to be said in its favour. Perhaps most important is that it gives you a chance to get to know people. For many people, it's the only opportunity they will ever have to mix with all sorts of different people. I think it has an important social aspect to it. Conscription ensures there is a close interaction between the army and society.
Some people claim that a professional army would be more efficient.
Well, it might be more efficient, but with conscription you can use manpower and not high technology with massive staff costs to run the armed services. A totally professional army is much more expensive to run than a conscripted army.
But surely there are some jobs in the armed forces which require a high degree of training and skill.
Yes, of course, but those jobs can be left to the professionals. There are lots of military jobs which require very little training, such as driving jeeps or carrying guns, and conscripts can do them very well. Leave the tricky jobs to the professionals and let the conscripts do the dirty work. Above all, I think it's important to serve one's country, and it gives you a real sense of national identity.
Extract B.
It's such a waste of time, though.
I mean a year away from real life. I think it's particularly tough on those people who are studying for a higher degree and who have to interrupt their studies to do their military service. When you interrupt your studies to do something non-intellectual for a long time, it makes it difficult to start again.
But surely doing your military service is a way of giving something back to the system which has supported you and educated you.
But it's such a waste of time and effort. Misguided effort, I call it. We don't need an army these days anyway. There must be better ways of paying one's debt to society. It's the trivial aspect of the army which I can't understand. The idea of discipline for its own sake, even if it's at the expense of efficiency. It doesn't matter if the tanks don't work, as long as the men have neat uniforms and shiny boots. Oh, it really is so petty and such a waste of time.
Extract C.
I do think that some form of service is a good idea, but as I'm a pacifist, I'm against military service. How about some form of public service, such as working in a hospital or helping old people or something like that? I think a few months of compulsory civilian service would be a very good idea. I'd certainly be happy to do something like that, but definitely not in the armed forces.
Unit 11, Section A. Listening. Activity 3. Extract 1.
Well, I'm married with a small child. I chose to work nights because the shifts are longer, which means fewer days at work in the week. And it's better paid because the hours are unsocial, even though I have much less to do because the patients are all fast asleep. I only do it for the money because of house payments. But it's exhausting and extremely disruptive. I'm lucky to have my mother living near the hospital, because she helps out with the childminding. Now I'm expecting another child, and I'll probably go on to part-time day shifts. It's impossible to have a proper family life when I'm on night, and it strains the relationship. I'm much too tired to go out on the days I'm not on duty. Fortunately, my husband's a doctor, so he understands. But even though he works at the same hospital, his timetable rarely coincides with mine, and we sometimes go for a week without seeing each other.
Extract 2.
I chose to work at night because I'm a loner, a night bird. I really enjoy the city at night because there's no traffic, much less stress than during the day. You meet some fairly unusual customers at night as well, which makes it a bit more interesting. I'm married, but the kids are grown up and live away from home. My wife found it tough at first, but she's adapted and has her own life with girlfriends. Because I'm a loner, it hasn't really affected my social life. I mean, I don't like going out in the evenings. My main pleasure is fishing on some lonely stretch of river on a day off. I'm my own boss when I'm at work. Cab is like a second home for me. I can sleep any time, so I have no problems catching up. Not driving, of course.
Unit 11, Section A. Listening. Activity 5. Extract 1.
I remember the first time I flew from England to Japan. We left at about midday and had lunch up on the sea. Then, at about 3:30 in the afternoon, it started to get dark, much earlier than usual, of course. By the time we had dinner, it was in the middle of the night. We finally landed in the morning, Japanese time. But according to our body clocks, it was just about time to go to bed. Well, I was tired, of course, for a few hours. But they say you should try and keep going until the time you're meant to go to bed, which would have meant staying awake for about 30 hours or so. In the middle of the afternoon, I was feeling physically sick with jet lag. It really is a strange experience. I slept well that night. But I didn't really recover until about 2 days later. You wake up at strange times in the night as well for a few days after the flight.
Extract 2. It's so disruptive, putting the clocks forward. It's supposed to conserve energy, but I really don't see how that works. It's one of those typical bureaucratic decisions which irritates everybody. The worst time is in March, when you suddenly find yourself getting up in the dark again, just when you'd got used to the light spring mornings. And the children take ages to adapt. You try telling a 3-year-old that she's got to eat an hour later, or go to bed an hour earlier. When they get back from school, they're irritable and miserable. It takes about a week before they adapt to the new times. It's all very annoying. Unit 11, Section A. Listening. Activity 7. Exam question. You will hear an interview between a radio presenter and a biologist who studies human biological rhythms. Answer the questions by choosing the best answer, A, B, C, or D. You will hear this piece twice.
On the 27th of March, Europe sets its clocks forward 1 hour. It's a ritual act, greeted with general approval. The extra hour of daylight in the evening gives the illusion of a longer day. Our leisure time expands and we relax. Dr. Peterson, is changing the clocks simply an opportunity to spend time in the light with our friend?
Well, the changes are moral and social. They're biological as well. You see, human biological patterns follow a 24-hour cycle, like the geophysical pattern of the sun and the moon and the tides. And these are adapted to the alternation of day and night and light and darkness. We have a sleep-wake cycle, regulated by the daily rotation of the Earth around its axis. And these so-called circadian rhythms operate at every level of our organs and cells. They govern heart rate, body temperature, respiration patterns, levels of stress, sleep hormones, and blood coagulation.
What happens when these biological rhythms are disturbed?
Disturbance occurs when our internal clocks and our environment mismatch, which happens not only when the clocks change, but when crossing time zones and doing shift work. The consequences of this disturbance range from digestive and sleep problems to cardiac disorders. It can also affect behavior, metabolism, mood, and performance. Blood flow, for example, varies around the clock, and doctors now know that the blood clots more easily in the early morning, adding to the risk of heart attacks or strokes.
Is there any medical help to rectify the problem of disturbed biorhythms?
Soon there will be drugs to correct disturbed biological rhythms.
Are there any positive effects in change of biorhythms?
Oh, absolutely. It can be helpful in the timing of surgical intervention and radiotherapy, and can also be used in preventive medicine. Our metabolism, and therefore our absorption and elimination of drugs, varies considerably over 24 hours. So, in theory, treatment can be timed so that the desired effects of taking certain drugs will reach their peak at the right biological time.
I see. Now, are the effects of putting the clocks forward in the spring different from putting them back in the autumn?
Well, it's clear that daylight plays an important role in our lives. We feel happier and more energetic on longer, brighter days. But our inner rhythms are also a result of social, physical, nutritional, and genetic factors. From the north to the south of Europe, or the USA, there are big differences in daylight, length of the working day, timing and constitution of meals, sleep time, temperature, and total amount of sunshine. All these factors can contribute to a change of biorhythms, and in turn contribute towards our well-being and our capacity to work efficiently or to enjoy ourselves.
So, manipulating biorhythms by changing the clocks can have important economic as well as social and biological effects.
Exactly.
Unit 12, Section A. Listening. Activity 4. Exam question. You will hear a tourist asking for information about a variety of places to visit in the Cotswolds. As you listen, fill in the information for items 1 to 10. Listen carefully, as you will hear this piece once only.
Good morning. Can I help you?
Yes, good morning. I've just got a few queries. I wonder if you can help me sort them out.
I'll see what I can do.
Can you tell me when Sudley Castle is open?
Yes, of course. Sudley Castle. Sudley. I think it's open all day. Someone asked me this a week or so ago.
I hope so. We want to go there this morning.
Here we are. I've got the guide. Yes, it's open from 11 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon. Well, not quite all day, but morning and afternoon.
11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Okay, that's great. Can you tell me how much it costs to get in?
Yes, it costs £4.50 for adults and £3 for children. It sounds a bit expensive, but there's a lot to do there. I think it's worth the money.
So, £4.50 for adults and £3 for children. No, that's about what you pay in most of these places, I suppose. Okay. Oh, now, another question. What exactly is Snow's Hill Manor? What can you see there?
Oh, it's a museum. An absolutely fascinating collection of all sorts of things. Like clocks and masks and cabinets. And there's a whole room full of samurai armour.
Samurai? Well, the kids will like that. Do you pay to get into this museum?
Yes, you do. I think it's about £3.50.
Is it open this time of year?
Yes, it's open until the end of September. So there are a few weeks before it closes.
Right. I'll try it. Oh, one last thing. My husband wants a weekend break at some point, and someone has recommended the Lygon Arms, but I've forgotten where it is. Is it somewhere suitable for touring the region?
Yes, it certainly is. It's in Broadway, which is on the edge of the Cotswolds. It's a lovely old hotel, about 400 years old, and you sleep in huge beds.
How much does it cost?
I've got the brochure here somewhere. Yes, they're offering weekend breaks at £210 per person for the whole weekend.
£210? That sounds a bit expensive.
Well, that includes breakfast and dinner, and the food is meant to be out of this world. So there are no extra costs.
None at all. Well, that makes it much more attractive. Well, I think I'll give them a ring to see if they've got a room for next weekend. Have you got their number?
Yes, I've got it right here. Here it is. It's 01386 852 255.
Oh, hang on. I haven't got anything to write it down with. Okay, what was the number again?
01386.
01386. Yes?
That's the code for Broadway. 852-255.
852-255. Okay. Yes, I've got it. 01386-852-255. Good. Well, thank you very much.
Enjoy your visit. Goodbye.
Unit 12, Section A. Listening. Activity 5. Exam question. You will hear someone in a tourist office explaining where to go and what to see in the Cotswolds. On the map, write down what you can see or visit in the various places. The places are numbered in the order in which they are mentioned. Listen carefully, as you will hear this piece once only.
Good morning, madam. Can I help you?
Yes. I'd like some information about the Cotswolds. I gather there's some place around here, and I'd like to have a look around.
Well, you've come to the right place, because we're right in the center of the Cotswolds.
Well, wouldn't you know it? Do you hear that, honey?
I sure did.
We're right in the heart of the Cotswolds. That's just great.
Do you have a map?
Yes, we do, right here.
That's no good. You got us lost already. No, we don't.
But here we are. Compliments of the Cotswold Tourist Authority. Now, let me see. We're here in Stowe.
Can you see that, honey? Make sure you get a good look at it.
I can see it. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you'd like me to suggest some places to visit...
We sure would, wouldn't we?
Well, the most beautiful place, I think, in the Cotswolds is Highbury.
Bybury.
It's right here, on the A433, between Burford and Cirencester. Just south of here. You see?
You mean Bibury?
Well, we pronounce it Bybury. Anyway, it's a very pretty little village on the River Colne. Well worth seeing. There's a good hotel there called the Swan Inn, and you should see the row of cottages called Arlington Row.
All right.
Another pretty village, well, more of a small town, is up here, called Chipping Campden.
Oh, nice name.
The high street in Chipping Campden is very beautiful.
Oh, is that two words?
That's right, madam. C-H-I-P-P-I-N-G, C-A-M-D-E-N.
I got it, okay. Where else?
North Leech is very pretty as well. It's a small wool town with a famous church.
Where is this North Leech place?
It's on this road, the A429 from Stowe to Cirencester, about 20 minutes away.
Oh.
Then I'd go and take a look at Burford, just on the edge of the Cotswolds. Here we are, Burford, just off the A40. It's also got a splendid high street, and there are lots of tea shops and gift shops.
Oh, sounds great.
No more major purchases, honey, we agreed.
Then here in Winchcombe, can you see, just northeast of Cheltenham on the B4632, is Sudley Castle. Some wonderful gardens.
Sudley Castle, okay, I got it. Great, we'll try it out.
If you like old buildings, have a look round Snow's Hill Manor over here, just northeast of Sudley and southwest of Chipping Campden. You see?
Okay. Snow's Hill, I can see.
And as far as other things to see and do, well, there's a model railway here in Thornton-on-the-Water. Yes, that's just here.
Model railway. Hey, that sounds great.
Please excuse my husband. He's got the brain of a 5-year-old.
Well, I expect you'd also be interested in the wildlife park here, just south of Burford on the A361.
Wildlife park?
Yes, it's a kind of zoo full of tigers and monkeys and rhinos and other wildlife. And then there's a country park here, just outside Broadway. There we are, Broadway Tower Country Park.
What's there to do in this country park?
Well, it's got things for children to do, but it's also got a fascinating tower to climb. And you get this fabulous view of the Cotswolds, and even into Wales.
Anything else?
Well, my favourite is the Farm Museum, just outside Whitney.
Farm Museum?
Yes, it's an old farm with lots of farm animals and exhibitions. It might be a very good place to start, so that you get an idea of Cotswold life. It's a very traditional part of the country.
Sounds like one great big theme park.
Excuse my husband, I'm just going to take him to that farm museum and leave him there.
Glad to be of service. Goodbye.
That's the end of Side 2.